Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, it's Clint Coons here with Anderson Business Advisors, and this is another episode of our weekly podcast. You know, with all the ins and outs of the real estate market recently, people are probably sitting back wondering, oh, I thought with COVID, the real estate market was going to crash. Well, as you know, if you've been following it and trying to invest, it's hard as hell to find some properties right now. I know that I personally have not been able to get a deal together in the last 2 months. And it's just because of scarcity, not knowing, you know, there not being any properties available because there's so much competition. But it's like all things, right? You just need to know where to go to make the investing. And that's what everyone is wondering. That's why on this podcast, what I wanted to do is bring on an expert in her field that is out there. She works around the country. She knows the markets that you should be considering for your investing because that's what she does. She teaches thousands of people across the country every year about single family investing and much more. And so with that, I want to invite on Kathy Fetke of Real Wealth Network. Kathy, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me here.
That's great. So why don't you just start out, give everyone a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Oh, well, it was probably, almost 18 years ago. Time flies. When my husband Rich was flying around the country with his new book called Extreme Success, and we really were at the top of our game. We had just bought a big house and we had two little kids and everything was going great until it all came to a screeching halt when he went to the doctor to check out on a freckle. As you know, he's a redhead, so I don't know how he knew that freckle needed to be checked because he's got a lot of them. Turned out it was melanoma. After further tests, the doctor thought he had maybe 6 months to live because they thought it metastasized. Thankfully, the doctor was wrong, and 18 years later, Rich is doing great today. But at the time, I didn't know, so I had to figure out how to take over the finances so he could take care of himself and, if the doctor was right, live his last 6 months without having to work. So I had a radio show at the time in San Francisco. I didn't know anything about real estate, but I thought I'll just use this radio show as a way for me to understand how some people seem to be able to live off of passive income. It was something I didn't know anything about. I wasn't taught it. My parents didn't do it. My dad made good money, but he spent it too. He was a dentist and what came in went out. So he didn't really know how to invest it. I just didn't understand how some people could actually have money that makes money. It was like a foreign concept. So I took the radio show I was doing, it was called The Edge at the time, changed it to The Real Wealth Show. And I just wanted to interview people who were living off passive income. And I also at the time found a sponsor to help pay for it all. And he was a mortgage broker. And so at the same time, I was learning the power of leverage to be able to acquire assets that create passive income. So that's The Real Wealth Show, that where I learned the secrets of the wealthy, basically. And then at the time, Rich found out, wow, you could take that radio show and put it on this new thing called iTunes. And suddenly I had kind of a worldwide following overnight. It's kind of crazy how the internet opens things up like that.
I think Rich found out too. He goes, great, you can do all the work and I can sit back and do all the crazy stuff I like to do, like walk on wires, skydive out of helicopters as they're upside down. I'm not sure how he's able to accomplish that, but
yeah.
Anyways.
He's been in the X Games, bungee jumping.
Yeah.
Off the Golden Gate Bridge. That's why I knew that a freckle probably wasn't going to take him down. And I'm really glad it didn't. That would have been just a terrible way to go. He'd much rather just jump off a cliff.
Yeah. And I imagine people can tell by the way we're talking. I've known Rich and Kathy now probably going on 8 to 10 years. They are a client of mine. So we've been working together. But really what attracted me to them initially, I reached out to them, was this concept of buying properties and holding on to them for cash flow. Because so many people like to talk about flipping. And I grew up in real estate investing. My father, avid real estate investor, bought a lot of real estate for cash flow purposes, still owns it today. And that mailbox money, I mean, that's his retirement right there. He retired at 50 and they have no wants. They're living the lifestyle that they had envisioned for themselves during retirement. And that's what I like about what you do so much, is that you give people that education and that ability to achieve that if they're just able to get past their fears. Because you live in California, I live in Washington, we live on the coast, and it's tough to invest out here and make money unless you're willing to put in, as I always say, sweat equity. Yeah. So, you know, growing up in California, how did you figure out yourself, hey, you got to go other places? I mean, what brought you to that?
Well, you're so lucky that you have a family that understood this concept that so many people don't understand. And it's wonderful that you're teaching it. I'm so glad I'm teaching it after finally getting to learn how the wealthy think. I remember my mom saying, she'd look at her husband, my dad, and say, we should buy a few houses and rent them out. They were in Menlo Park, like near Stanford. They could buy houses for $50,000 back then. And my dad was like, oh, Barbara, you know, that's crazy. Who's going to take care of them? So it was just like we had the means, just not the knowledge. And boy, I'd be a trust fund kid today if they had just listened to my mom. So once I started interviewing people and finding out how they were doing and how they were acquiring properties and maybe fixing them up and flipping, or, you know, living them in them for 2 years and then, you know, buying another one and renting it, the old one out for 3 years, then being able to sell it and get all the gain. I mean, there's just like so many tricks to saving on taxes, being an anonymous owner of the property. These are all things I learned in the interviews on The Real Wealth Show back then. One of the people I had on was Robert Kiyosaki. A lot of people know him, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. If you haven't read the book, go get it today. Read it, make your kids read it. It is a mindset changer for people. So it did help me change the mindset from being an hourly worker, even if it's your own business, you're still trading time for dollars, to actually running a business or owning assets that produce income for you. So I got him on the show. It was a huge win. And it was at the time that I was still learning. So we had our house and we started renting out rooms and making income that way. But we didn't know anything about really building a portfolio because, like you said, it was impossible. It was too expensive in California. Not to mention the landlord laws are terrible. So he said, you know, Kiyosaki came on the show and he said, oh, no, you don't want to be buying in California. You want to be selling in California. Well, why? He said, well, because first of all, it doesn't cash flow. Second of all, it's already peaked. And by 2007, they already know that when the loans adjust, people won't be able to make the payment. So this was a known thing that the banks knew when these loans were going to adjust. So people who really understood what was going on, understood the fundamentals of affordability and market cycles, knew to sell before 2007 in California. So Kiyosaki said, oh, he sold all of his California holdings where he made a bunch of money, took that equity and 1031 exchanged it to Texas properties where the values had not gone up. It wasn't a bubble. If anything, it was undervalued there. And it was just at the beginning of Texas being a magnet for business. They were attracting jobs, attracting population, but home prices hadn't gone up. So it was from Kiyosaki that I learned, oh, you can really time this well. The whole country doesn't operate as one real estate market. It's all these different real estate markets. And you can time your investments within, you know, the different cycles. So if you sold at the peak in California, you could exchange those properties, 1031 deferred, not have to pay taxes on until a much later date, could exchange them for a bunch of properties in Texas. So Rich and I jumped on a plane. We're like, hey, if it's good enough for Kiyosaki, it's good enough for us. We ended up buying 5 homes in one weekend in right outside of Dallas, because that's where most of the job growth was happening. Houston was good too, but the taxes were a little bit higher. Austin couldn't really get as much cash flow, so Dallas just made sense. Came home with 5 properties. I talked about it on The Real Wealth Show, and pretty soon our phones were ringing off the hook with people who wanted to know how we did it and who we worked with and how you use property managers. So it was really just kind of a trial and error process that got us investing out of state. But once we did it and we showed people that we survived it, we could kind of show the roadmap basically of how to do it. And that's what we've been doing ever since.
I mean, that's always the fear, investing out of state, because maybe your parents, as you stated, yours didn't, but if somebody's parents had property like my father, it's always local. I mean, the idea
You probably like tinkering around on it, fixing things.
Still does. I just talked to him today, and he's talking about a tenant that tried to file a restraining order against him, so he can't come and tell him to clean up the property because they're, you know, they're basically treating like a pigsty, and he had to go to court. So he enjoys that. But what you said, I think, was interesting, and you hear this a lot. You need to buy in those markets that have good job growth, that are on the uptrend. And so you brought up Dallas. A, would you invest in Dallas today? B, how do you find those markets? Because it seems real simple, but I mean, I wouldn't know where to go and look for that.
Well, you know, like I said, I learned from Kiyosaki and then subsequently just doing it and learning that there are three things we look for. And one is job growth. There was massive job growth in Texas. Well, there was job growth in California too. So, you know, that they kind of balanced each other. Then population growth. Well, there was massive population growth in Texas, but there was in California too. So the third thing we look at, besides job growth and population growth, both very important, is affordability. And that was the one thing California didn't have. So following those three things led us to Texas. It also led us to Florida and other areas in the country where if you could get the job growth, the population growth and the affordability, you could cash flow. But I'm a California girl, so cash flow alone is just not that exciting to me. I feel like once you have to repair something on the house, there goes all your cash flow. So I also wanted to be in areas that had one more thing, and that is some kind of infrastructure growth, whatever that would be that would potentially bring up the value of that area. If you've got the city or the state or business really investing in a certain area, there's a good chance values are going to go up. So when we decided to buy in Texas and Dallas specifically, why did we choose this little area called Rockwall when there were a whole lot of cities, you know, surrounding Dallas? We chose Rockwall because it was on a lake, so very beautiful, but you had to drive around the lake to get to Dallas, and it was like an hour commute to get to work. So, you know, people like living in nice places, but they really hate sitting in traffic. So it just prices weren't very high there because people didn't really want to make that commute. But what we knew is that a new freeway was coming on below the lake that would make it a 20-minute commute to Dallas. Wow. So that was the reason. So we had the job growth, population growth, affordability, and then we had this infrastructure investment in this freeway. Anytime you can get ahead of something like that, you can make money. So those little houses, we bought brand new little houses for $140,000 in Rockwall. Once that freeway went in and people saw, wow, I can live by a lake and have really good schools, but only be 20 minutes from work, those houses today are worth $400,000 or so. And at the time, people would say, well, nothing ever happens in Texas. You're never going to see appreciation. And that's just not true. You can find appreciation in any market if you get ahead of the growth, if you get in front of the path of progress. So how do you find those places?
Yeah.
At this point, people tell us because we're pretty well known for doing that. So people are like, hey, you got to check out what's happening in Atlanta. Well, then let me tell you what's happening in Atlanta. I bet you didn't know that Atlanta has an entire film industry there because it's so much cheaper to film there. There's like a little mini Hollywood there just south of Atlanta. It's also a big tech hub and one of the largest airports. And now the city is taking the old train tracks and kind of doing what they did to New York with the High Line. They're taking the train tracks and making it into beautiful parkland. So I can assure you everything around that is going to pop in value. That's just one kind of explanation. You've got Florida now, where the area between Tampa and Orlando is the fastest growing in the country. And that has a lot to do with the fact that there's no state income tax, but also massive job growth and lots of demographic shifts. People, I mean, this was already happening before the pandemic, where people were leaving high-priced markets and able to work a little bit more remotely, live in a place that is more affordable, but also has a lot of things to do. So we already saw massive, massive migration to the Southeast. After Corona hit, it has accelerated. New York is losing people. I think it was like 500,000 people have moved out just during this pandemic. And add to it the fact that there's been social unrest in the cities. People are leaving. The same with San Francisco. They're getting out. They were doing it already. But now it's really accelerated into areas where people can raise their kids, with a yard. If this is the new normal, they want to know that their kids can go outside and play because the parks are shut down, you know? Yeah. And we don't know if this is going to happen again. I think a lot of people are concerned it could happen again, or that it's not going to be over, or maybe the vaccine comes out, but it doesn't work. I mean, you know, we don't know. So people are realizing, well, gosh, I'm going to be working at home. I'm going to be homeschooling. If my entertainment's at home, I'm not going out, I'm cooking at home, I'm going to have a bigger home. And you're not going to have that in the city. So they're moving out. We're actually seeing for the first time people moving to rural areas. They're just going, you know, it's like, hey, I want a second home where I can fish. You know, now they're like, I just want to move there because I can live there and work remotely. So real estate is booming across the board. Definitely big migration patterns going to the Southeast, but it's really all over the country. It's phenomenal what's happening right now.
Well, I mean, so as an investor, I mean, I've seen it. Then how do you determine where you're going to dip your toe? Because there's a lot of price competition now. I mean, it's driving up prices everywhere. And if I want to generate strong passive income from my real estate and get that appreciation, what are you looking at yourself right now?
Yeah, well, on top of the things I just said, so population growth, job growth, infrastructure development, affordability, that the main thing that has to be present before any of that matters to me is the laws, the landlord laws, because being here in California where I'm located, it's crazy. It's crazy land. Like to own property here is just dumb. I mean, rental property because, well, for one, if you're in the commercial space, there's talk about Prop 13 changing where taxes would go up on the commercial properties. I just did an interview an hour ago with a site selection guy for corporations. They are not choosing California. And it has a lot to do, you'd think it would be because of taxes or landlord laws or something. It is the Prop 13 where they, you know, taxes are going to go up. Basically, Prop 13, for those who don't know what that is, mm-hmm. We were really lucky that when my dad was younger and they owned property, values went up so quickly. He bought a house for $99,000. It was worth $1 million by the time I went through high school. Like prices went up so fast. But then property taxes did too, and it was pricing seniors out of housing. They couldn't afford to live there. So basically, Prop 13 was passed where your property taxes would only go up incrementally every year, very, very tiny amount, and not along with the inflation of the property because the inflation was just too high in California. That's looking to be reversed, at least on commercial properties. We don't know if it will, but there's a lot of talk about it. So that means a lot of these commercial properties just are less interesting, you know, to just, again, businesses are not wanting to do business in California.
Well, so, I mean, it comes down to the red state versus blue state. I've always told people, if you can, avoid blue states to invest in because of the fact of their landlord-tenant laws and their property taxes, or even, you know, cities. Take Austin, for example, which you brought up. I mean, the taxes there kill any profits you make in your properties.
Yeah.
I've looked at Austin before on different occasions, and I just could never justify it. And so I don't know, when you're looking at the areas you're going to invest in, you know, how much of this factors in if you're looking at the influx. So let's say I wanted to buy property longer term in Tallahassee, Florida, but I see a lot of people are moving there from New York. Does that then concern me? Because if they bring the same politics that created the problem in New York, and for example, and made property taxes so high and landlord-tenant laws so egregious, and they wanted to escape it, but they moved down to Tallahassee and they do the exact same thing over again that they did up there, then that makes it less of an attractive environment. Does that ever factor in?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's face it. Oregon and Washington, what's happening is really our fault. It's all the Californians that moved to Oregon and Washington. I mean, for so many years, the locals were angry at Californians because we'd come with all our money and we'd drive prices up. Now, if you owned a home, then you loved us. If you were trying to buy one, you hated us because we were driving prices up. And then we brought our politics with us. And look, you guys you're worse than we in California at this point.
I know. It seems like it. It's horrible.
And it didn't used to be that way. So it is possible that we will, Californians will infect other areas. And I, oh boy, listeners might hate me for saying this, but it's just, unfortunately, it very well could happen. And I know Texans are very concerned about that because so many California businesses have moved to Texas and they brought their California employees and their politics. So we'll see. On the flip side of that, many people are fleeing those high-priced states that have been poorly run with trying to raise taxes every which way they can without reducing expenses and giving away freebies to those who maybe aren't working and really, mm-hmm. Not incentivizing those who are working. They're leaving. So it is, my guess is that a lot of people who are fleeing those states, the high tax states, are doing so because they don't like the high taxes. So hopefully they don't bring that part of politics.
That part with them. All right. So where would you invest? So if somebody's listening right now, they're thinking, all right, where should I be looking? What states? And I know there's pockets in every state, but since you do this on a day in and day out basis.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people still really love Texas, Dallas, mm-hmm. and parts of Houston because of the massive job growth and job diversification. So it's not dependent on oil anymore. In fact, we've had cheap oil and, an oil crisis for, 5 or 6 years now. And Houston home prices have actually gone up in that time. And that's just a testament to how Texas is no longer just dependent on the oil industry. It's so diverse. So even though taxes are high, the cash flow is pretty good. Some people just like it for the safety of so much job diversification. I really do like areas that have lower property taxes. So that is one of the reasons I like Florida, because you've got some of the same things. You've got no state income tax, but you've got really cheap housing combined with low insurance and low property taxes. So the cash flow is higher. Alabama, parts of Alabama, same thing, really low property taxes, really low state income taxes and job growth, although not nearly kind of job growth we're seeing in some other areas, but still it's growing. Again, parts of Atlanta, although Atlanta's gotten more expensive. So what we've done, at least in our fund, we have a single family rental fund for people who just really want to be totally passive. They just did not want to be landlords at all. So we kind of do the management for them. And the way that we kind of balance out the portfolio and the way that we teach other people to do it is to just diversify a little bit and maybe choose growth markets where you're not going to get as much cash flow, but you probably get more appreciation, and then buy some really high cash flow properties in the Midwest where, there is job growth, but you're just probably never going to see a lot of appreciation. So in other words, we might buy 10 properties in Tampa or the Orlando area or Cape Coral or some of these areas that are just booming, and we might get a 5 or 6% return. So nothing mind blowing, but we're seeing massive appreciation. Then we offset that with properties in Ohio or Kansas City, even Detroit, where we're getting closer to 8 or 9% cash on cash return, or I should say after financing cash flow, but not generally as much appreciation. At least we didn't think so. But we've been getting it there too. It's amazing. We were buying properties in Detroit for $60,000. They're selling for $90,000 now, just a few years later. So even in these areas that typically don't appreciate, they are, just because they're so cheap. Mm-hmm. And there's a lack of supply. That is the theme across the board, that after 2007, 2008, when the housing market completely collapsed, builders got wiped out. They just froze for a few years, and they've taken a while to get back up and running because it takes a long time to build houses and buy land and get it entitled and so forth. So it took a long time for them to get back up and running, and they've never gotten back to demand levels. So we just are seeing a lack of supply across the board. Add to it that a lot of homes have been used for Airbnb and vacation rentals. So this kind of got taken off the market, and we're seeing more people going in and buying second homes to take those off the market. So it's just a real lack of supply, tremendous demand. The demand is for affordable, and builders simply can't build anything affordable. It's just too hot. That lumber cost just went up 17% over the last few months, and expected to go up another 45% or something. So material costs are going up. So builders just cannot build affordable housing. So if you can find it and renovate it, it's gold right now, because it's just not out there.
I know. So we invest in Winston-Salem area, and that's the thing we run into is there's not enough, there's no properties available right now. And we've decided that we're buying land and we're working with the city to get some breaks to provide affordable housing because we see that as our only option to continue to grow our portfolio. Whereas, you know, a couple of years ago when the home prices were down, we still had a supply problem in some areas. We were thinking about building because when you looked at your CapEx over, you know, 5 years, it came out to be about, I mean, there's no CapEx on the new property. So your returns got really close when you were buying an existing home and doing the remodel versus just building new. And so I think the market's been, it's really strange right now, kind of squirrely in that neither one seems to work as you stated. Yeah. But have you considered that even though the costs have gone up, have you guys have looked at it with your own portfolios doing any land acquisitions, maybe? I know it's kind of off topic what you normally do, but if you just
suddenly we do. Yeah, we're building. Well, we're building subdivisions in Reno and Carson City and Bozeman.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Napa, yep.
But we're selling retail because they don't make sense as rentals. Although they're starting to make a little bit more sense as rentals because rent, you know, rents are going up as well. But in those cases, I think we're just selling retail. We are vetting right now. We're looking at a build-to-rent community in kind of around Atlanta where the numbers work a little bit better. But it's still in the 5, 6% arena. So the thing I do like about a build-to-rent community is that when the market turns, you can sell the homes off one-off, whereas if you build an apartment, obviously you've got to sell the whole apartment. So, but even that is in high demand. I mean, housing is just the one industry right now that recovered almost immediately. We were so panicked in March. We're like, what are we going to do? Everyone lost their jobs. How are they going to make, you know, pay the rent? It was just terrifying. So we brought all of our property managers together, all 15 of them in different states, and said, what are you going to do? And we brainstormed ideas, and you know, it turns out the stimulus money came and people were able to pay their rent. Then the PPP loans came and people were able to pay the next rent. And what we found out is, wow, these people really don't want to get evicted. There's an eviction moratorium and they could just not pay their rent, but they're not doing that. They're paying. We had a higher collection rate than any time. Because the last thing they want is to not have a place to live right now.
Yeah. It's,
your living situation has moved to number one priority. And even with all this stuff in place with the eviction moratoriums, people are not doing that. They're paying the rent, at least in our communities. So, yeah, it's interesting time to, it's a very good time to be in the business. I thought we'd be done by now. I thought we would see kind of a correction. But here's the key. And almost nobody talks about this because it's not what you learn in economics. And most people didn't take economics classes. But we have such a manipulated economy so that anything that would make sense probably doesn't. Anything that you would predict, probably you can't, because all of it, it just all falls on what the Federal Reserve is going to do and what kind of stimulus is there. That's what it always comes down to. Are interest rates high? Are they low? Is there liquidity? Can people borrow money? That's what matters. And the Fed came in a huge way to save the economy with a Band-Aid solution. This is not a permanent solution. It's not necessarily a good solution, but it's what they did, and we have to pay attention to it. The Fed just printed trillions of dollars. They printed more money in the last few months than they did during the entire Great Recession, you know, over years' time. They did it in just a few months over this coronavirus. $4 trillion just in stimulus. And then the Fed did unlimited stimulus on loans. What kind of loans? Real estate loans. So that tells you something. That tells you that the federal government wanted real estate to survive. Because when real estate survives, it has an incredible impact on the rest of the economy. So massive trillions of dollars of stimulus that really went into real estate so that people could continue to borrow money cheap so that they could buy homes and keep the market going. And that saved it. Without that, we'd be having a very different conversation today. But when that much money pours into the economy, you've got massive, massive money supply. When all that money is chasing a very limited number of assets, that, like we said, there's a lack of supply on the housing side, that you've got so much money chasing it with cheap dollars, that's what's driving prices up. If we were talking in March, I would not have expected that. I didn't think that the housing market would collapse like a lot of people thought, because I knew there was a lack of supply. I didn't think it would collapse, but I didn't think we'd have bidding wars, you know, and prices going up just a few months later. It's insane.
Well, how about then with the COVID impacts? So you have people in houses. Do you think within the next 6 months, because of the banks willing to provide abatements on mortgage payments for a while, that when that turns off and people have to start paying their mortgages again, do you think there's going to be any issues there and you're going to see more supply come on because people that don't have a job to go back to because the economy has shifted and we've changed how we're conducting business?
Yeah, there will be an uptick of foreclosures. There's no doubt about that. But it's not going to be, do not rub your hands together and think, oh boy, I'm going to go through another 2008 and pick up stuff for 10 cents on the dollar. That's not happening. I'm sorry to break it to you. Now, there will be definitely a softening in the high end because there was overbuilding already. This was already on the table. So many of these things that were already in momentum just accelerated. There was already an overbuilding of overpriced condos in big cities. Way too many came online. Builders could only make a profit on the high end. That's what they build. There's not the demand for it. And now you add COVID. Nobody wants to live in a skyscraper downtown anymore. It's not cool anymore. I mean, you know, if you can't go out and go to restaurants or use the fancy pool or the gym or go get your hair done down the street, why are you living in the city paying those kind of dollars for it? It's not fun. So those are going empty. We're going to see possibly some good pricing in those for people who maybe want them. But we otherwise, yeah, we're just seeing across the board huge demand for anything else.
Great. So you have a podcast of your own and you do a number of other things. So could you just tell everybody what you have available for them? People are listening in, what they can receive. And I've got everything in the show notes as well. If they wanted to get a hold of you or, you know, join your podcast, find out more information.
Yeah. The podcast is called The Real Wealth Show, which you can find on anywhere where there's podcasts. And we also have realwealth.com is our website. And we do free webinars every week to really educate people on where to buy and what to buy and how to do it. We have teams across the country that will help you find the property. They'll renovate it for you. They'll put a tenant in. So, because it's really hard to do that when you don't live in the area. It's really, really hard. You can get ripped off. I mean, it's hard to manage your contractors next door. I got one in the house right now. It's hard anyway. But, you know, so we just have other people do that who are experts in their area. And you can get those details. And it's all free at realwealth.com.
Well, great. Thanks for coming on. I know you got a lot going on down there and I hope people take advantage of and get the education because knowing where to invest is so important. And there's a lot of people out there that will say this market's great or that market's great. I knew I fell into that trap way back in the day and I lost money.
Me too.
Yep. We all do it, but you've taken it and you've turned it into a way to help people. So thank you for doing that. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me here.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.